afternoon, everyone. This is Caroline Kilborn, and this is Writers' Voices, KRUU 100.1 FM, community-based station in Fairfield, Iowa. And at the moment, there's a lot of noise out here. Let me close this door. Our guest today has not yet called, so I'm going to talk a little bit about this book. It's a fantastic book. It really is. It's Now Write, Screenwriting. Now, if you're interested in writing at all, sometime you might want to be a screenwriter. Sometimes if you have a wonderful story and you publish it and then it's picked up by a movie company and they want you to do the screenwrite, then you might have to, or you might collaborate with the screenwriter. And there are, of course, screenwriters who don't write their own material at all. They just adapt a book to a movie. But this book, Now Write, Screenwriting by Sherry Ellis. She's the editor, edited by Sherry Lewis, because there are all these different people that have contributed to this and give you exercises and showing you how to start getting writing and to start writing. I mean, it's just really something else. Okay, let's start at the beginning here. I always like to look, when I look at a new book, at the table of contents, because that's where I find out, okay, is there something in here I want to pursue? The first, start with the conflict, and that's by Mardik Martin. The second one is the cringe exercise, and this was intriguing to me, so I marked this, and I thought, okay, how are we going to do this? The cringe exercise. Now, this person that wrote this particular chapter, Hal Ackerman, has been on the faculty of the UCLA School of Theater, Film, and Television for the past 22 years and is currently co-chair of the screenwriting program. He is the author of Write Screenplays That Sell, The Ackerman Way, and his play, Testosterone, Now Prostate Cancer Made a Life Man of Me, which concluded its premiere, the theatrical run in Santa Monica, California, won the William Saroyan Centennial Award for Drama. So his exercise starts out, write 10 things you have done in your life that literally make you cringe when you realize you actually did them. Just a brief one-line description. You know, we all have things in our life that we wish we hadn't done, things we're not proud of, right? Everyone does. I mean, this is nothing new. But to actually sit down and write about them is something else. And to bring them to mind is something else. Sometimes these events come back to haunt us in our thought processes. We're thinking about something and all of a sudden we realize, hey, I'm thinking about something totally different now. How does that happen? Well, that's the way the mind works. And our mind, sometimes when we start to write, we'll find that we're remembering things we thought we had long lost, had been long lost in our memory. And we may want to remember them, we may not want to remember them. But we have a chance to write them down. And let me assure you that if you want to write something about your childhood or your early adulthood, or maybe you are an early adult and you just want to remember something about your childhood, do write it down. Someday, somebody will read that and be very happy to read that. My grandfather had he was a lawyer. He had a lot of experiences in life, and he had a lot of interesting relatives. And he tried to tell me things when I was a young person, and he could tell I wasn't really paying attention, probably, because he said, okay, he said, I know you don't care about this now, but someday you will. And he was right. How I wish I had listened. I do have some things that he collected, and some writings that he collected, and so I have that, but I don't have all those stories that he had. And so, you know, I wish I had listened to him, and I wish I had recorded it. Now, you see, if you have an older relative, you can go and say, okay, why don't you tell me a story about your life, and we'll record it here. And that's even better than writing it, because somebody else can write it down, perhaps, and they can put little things in, their own take on it. Do we have a guest? All right. Hello, Sherry.
Hi.
Hi. Okay, I started without you. Yeah, because I had to go on the air, so I started without you. But what I did was I told them about, I just started with that Hal Ackerman chapter on the cringe exercise, because that intrigued me.
I'm not sure that I'll be able to comment on that one. I don't remember the exercises particularly, so if you started with that, I'm not sure that I can.
Well, I can fill you in, but I want you, first of all, just tell us a little bit about your background, okay? And how you came to put this collection together, this collection of
now
write screenwriting.
The book is the third in this Now Write Screenwriting Act. Actually, about 8 years ago, I started to do author interviews with fiction authors who I had studied with,
mm-hmm.
and ultimately they were published in many literary magazines and then in a book called Illuminating Fiction. As I was putting Illuminating Fiction together, I thought, wouldn't it be cool to ask the authors for writing exercises?
Yes.
Only about half of them agreed to.
Oh, really?
So I realized that would be kind of an odd-shaped book. And at the same time, I started to share my idea with other people, and they said, why don't you just do a book of writing exercises? And so that's how I began.
Very good.
That's how the book Now Write Fiction was born. From that, I moved on to Now Write Nonfiction, which I believe was last year. And then the current book we're talking about today is Now Write Screenwriting.
Mm-hmm.
I have a niece named Lori Lamson who lives in L.A., and she was really, really proud and excited about the Now Write books. That I do one on screenwriting, and it just seemed natural that I ask her to help me with that one,
mm-hmm.
because she had some exposure to screenwriting in her career, and I thought it would be a great experience for her to have a book out.
Oh yes, I think it always is a great experience.
that's the book we're talking about today.
Yes,
and I'm actually currently working on a book on mysteries and thrillers.
Oh,
book of exercises on mystery and thrillers.
Wow. Well, that seems to be mysteries and thrillers and police shows and so forth seem to be the big thing now on television. I don't know, you know, so. Now, do these authors that you have in here, and these screenwriters that you have in here, the exercises, they also write for television as well as screen, correct?
Some of them are TV writers and some of them are movie writers.
Mm-hmm.
I would say the majority are movie writers, however.
Well, there's a lot of this book is, the reason it's so good, I think, is because each one of these chapters is short and concise, and they give a little bit of a introduction, and then they give an exercise, and then go on to the next one, and it gives the reader a chance to try different things.
Precisely. And the other thing is, I think what makes the book, not to toot my own horn too much, but I think what makes the book so compelling is that each of the authors shares something personal about their exercises,
mm-hmm.
and how they've used them in their own writing.
Right. Correct.
So that's one of the things we asked all the writers to do, and I've been doing that in the more recent books.
Okay,
all about the exercise.
In the books that you're starting on now or working on, are those people that write thrillers and mysteries?
Precisely.
Okay, now, this is fascinating. It really is that you have that you are in contact with all these people and that they are willing to give you their ideas. I think it's great.
Yeah, I really am overwhelmingly pleased with the reaction of writers to the series. They've been very, very generous in their contributions.
Yes, indeed.
Because it's deeply, deeply appreciated.
Let's see, how many chapters do we have in this one?
Well, it really isn't chapters. Let me explain. I would say it has 9 chapters,
mm-hmm.
you know, including, you know, the major chapter categories, which we could review, but then it has 94 contributions.
Right, right.
So the chapters are divided into about 8 or 9 contributions each.
Because we have get writing, choosing your story, get writing, structure, theme, crafting scenes, character development, verbal and nonverbal communication, revision, and now what? Okay, so do many people who write books, do their stories get made into movies, you think, or movies mostly thought up by screenwriters, would you say? Or do you have any idea about that?
Oh, I would say they're much more thought up by screenwriters.
Okay.
In my experience, at least.
Well, you have it's not an easy thing because you have besides the words that the actors are going to speak, you have the visual things that go on too, and the screenwriter has to take all that in consideration.
Precisely.
Did you ever do any screenwriting yourself?
Yes, actually, I'm at work on two screenplays, but one of them is based on a novel that I'm transforming into a screenplay.
Okay, you're doing two at the same time? You said you're working on two.
I don't work on them both as fastidiously, equally fastidiously. I'm
right.
more at work on the first one.
Okay,
transformed from a novel.
Does it take? How do you go about it? Just how do you go? How do you go about it?
It's been. How do I go about it? I guess what I would say is a novel is approximately 300 pages,
mm-hmm.
and a screenplay is approximately 100 pages.
Okay.
So choosing what to include and choosing what's most dramatically powerful and compelling and leads the reader, the viewer, to the movie is the challenge.
Because you have to have an idea about how characters are going to move, where they're going to move, at what speed they're going to move. It's like stage directions, although you're not on a stage, but they are on a stage in a way. I don't know. I used to be in plays, and I know when you would read the script, you have to take into consideration where you are when you're saying the line. And I've never been in a movie, but I assume that same thing happens there.
Oh, yes. Placing your characters is a vital part of the screenplay.
Right.
And also giving motions of what their physical responses are to
mm-hmm.
situations is really vital.
Right. So you have to have a lot of knowledge about how people might feel about different things.
I like to think that you do.
I think you probably are more adept than you realize, because writing a screenplay, I would think writing a screenplay would be difficult. This book, which is now Screenwriting, is edited by Sherry Ellis, and that's who we're talking to right now. And it is a fascinating book because there are so many ideas in here to get started writing. And that's what, some people really do want to write. They really feel the urge to write, but how do I start? So I would say...
One of the really great things about the book is, the 94 screen... Some of them are really, really quite famous, but some of them are just people who have been writing for so long that they have the ability to really share wonderful information.
Mm-hmm.
Not only are the experts, quote, the best, but everyone is.
We have here in Paula Brancato. Is that how you pronounce that name? Brancato. Award-winning screenwriter.
I really don't want to comment off the top of my head without looking at the spelling. So
okay.
But I believe that's the correct
spelling. Right. Anyway, she serves out in the faculty of the University of Southern California, and she's writing on Finding Your Story, and her first sentence is, a screenplay begins with the creation of a story. Unfortunately, not all stories deserve to be told. And I guess you have to decide that. If you really think yours deserves to be told, then you go from there, I would say.
Precisely.
Yeah.
I think that's a really extremely powerful beginning, as
it
as
is.
You pointed out, for her exercise.
And then her exercise is she gives you a scenario. And then you'd go from there. And this is I had a little writing group at my church, and this is the way I got some of them started, to give them a little scenario, and then they finish what happens. And that's a good way to start. It really is. It may not have ever happened to you, but, you know, she says jot down 20 possibilities of what might happen next. And there are possibly 20 possibilities in any different scenario. Do not think, just jot. Take a few minutes, then reread and list. Are there any that make you laugh, cry, cringe, or otherwise affect you? Good insights, yes? That's just a sample of the ideas that these writers will give you in this book. It's just really quite interesting. Let's see. The one on change your perspective. This is by Michael Ray Brown, Hollywood script doctor and the founder of StorySense, a story analyst for 7 major studios. Wow. He contributed to the development of such films as Lethal Weapon, Braveheart, Red Corner, Contact, and Heart's War. He is a working screenwriter and frequent lecturer on the topic of screenplay structure. Now, all these people have made a success of their field. And that's really quite amazing that they were all willing to give you some ideas or give their ideas for this book, I think. Don't you think that's amazing?
Well, I'm not as amazed as I was the first time around when I did the first.
Okay.
What I've really found is it's usually I probably invite 4 or 5 times the number of people who agree.
Mm-hmm.
But a pretty high percentage does agree to contribute. So, as the editor of the book, it takes a lot of effort to find the people to contribute.
Yes, I'm sure it does.
To get a slam dunk yes.
So
a lot of people are so very generous with their time and thoughts and expertise.
Mm-hmm. So how do you contact these? Do you meet them personally?
That's a secret.
Oh.
I don't really share how I do it because otherwise...
Everybody would do it. Okay. I got you.
Everybody would do it.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's an amazing feat, at any rate, to be able to get all these ideas from all these people, because it's really, really is. Now, okay, let's talk about some of your other books. The first one was what?
Now Write Fiction.
Now Write Fiction. And how did you come to write that one? Or how did you come to edit that one, to start with that?
I think I might have already shared that with you about having done author interviews and really just all of a sudden having the idea that I'd love to include their exercises in a book.
Okay.
But not having enough exercises, so really spreading out to a much larger population of authors.
And then the next one was writing nonfiction, correct?
Yep.
Is it harder to write nonfiction than it is fiction, do you think?
I think it all depends on your personality and who you are.
And what your experience is.
Nonfiction is probably harder than fiction.
Depends on what your life experiences have been, too, I expect.
I would imagine so, and a lot to do with your personality as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, go ahead.
How specific you are about details about life events.
Right. Now,
in the real telling of them.
These authors that you have met and talked to and gotten contributions from, have you remained friends with some of them?
Some of them have been very kind and have done readings at bookstores. For example, we have a wonderful reading coming up in L.A. at the Writer's Bookstore.
Oh.
And three of the people who contributed exercises to the screenwriting book are going to be there. I'm really proud of who they are and that they're coming.
I should say.
Would you like to hear who they are?
Yes, I would.
Actually, it's on February 3rd at 6:30.
Okay. Because this program is
Jones is
6:30, February 3rd. You're kind of cutting out, so I have a little trouble. Okay, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, you're cutting out a little bit. So this is on February 3rd at 6:30. And what was the name of the store again?
If you want, I can switch to another phone. Hold on one second.
Okay. That was a little difficult. Sometimes when you're on certain phones, don't go so well over the radio. So that's what happens.
Well, I hope this one's better.
I think it will be. I can just almost tell right away. Were you on a cell phone before?
Anyway. No, it wasn't a cell phone. But,
okay.
Anyway.
Well, different phones and different connections. That's just the way it is. Okay. So once again, the name of the bookstore.
Is the Writer's Bookstore in L.A.
Okay.
And it's on February 3rd at 6:30 p.m. Amy Holden Jones will be there, and she wrote Beethoven and this Indecent Proposal and Mystic Pizza.
Oh, my gosh.
Christina Kim will also be there. She was a writer on the TV show Lost.
Okay.
Phil Ajakwe, who was a TV writer and producer on WBTV, will be there.
Well, you know, this show is heard all over the world, actually, because it's it's online. So I'm sure that we have some listeners in L.A., and I'm sure that they will be really pleased to know that this is going to happen.
Mm-hmm. And may I take a moment to just share one other thing with your audience?
You bet.
My niece Lori and I are very proud to have recently completed putting together a webpage. Website.
Okay.
For our books, for my books, and for her book as well. There are samples of all the writing exercises from the three different books, or four book different books, on the webpage. So if one of your listeners wants to go to nowwrite.net, they can find sample exercises so that they can.
Okay, you're still cutting out about every other word.
Well, that I can't help them.
Yeah, I know. Okay, let's try it again. I got .net, and what's the first part of it?
Now write.
Now write.
.net.
Okay, now write .net. All right. That's better. Okay.
There are a total of 9 free exercises from the three different books.
Mm-hmm.
3 on screenwriting.
Well, that's very helpful. Now, how can our listeners obtain your books?
They're really pretty readily available at all bookstores, and Amazon.com is one of the easiest places to buy it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Amazon.com, and we have 2 excellent bookstores here in Fairfield. So I hope someday you're able to come to Fairfield. It's a fantastic town. Of course, Maharishi University of Management is here, but the art and the writers that are here, and it's just in the musicians, it's really something. It really is for a town this size. It's unbelievable.
Wow.
So I hope someday we can meet you in person. That would be nice.
Yes, that would be nice.
Okay, so once again, this book, Now Write, Screenwriting, has 9 different sections, and in each section are many exercises by well-known screenwriters telling you how to get started, how to develop a plot, how to develop the characters, the whole thing. The first 10 pages, here's one, let me see, 309. I have been glancing through this and reading parts of it. Okay. Once you've finished your, this is by Ken Rotcop. I imagine it's Rotcop. Once you've finished your screenplay, then comes the hard part of getting someone to read it. Ah, yes. Someone of influence who can turn your script into a movie. Convincing someone requires persuasiveness, enthusiasm, and the ability to verbally communicate your passion for your story. This procedure is called the pitch, and he gives you some rules on how to do that. Keep your pitch under 2 minutes. So that would be a challenge. That would really be a challenge. So there's more to writing, to screenwriting, than just writing. You have to be able to sell your product to somebody, unless you are employed by a studio or something, and then you are hired to write the screenwrite, the play, the film. How about writing for the stage? Is that very different than writing for film?
I really wouldn't be able to comment on that. That's not something that I've studied.
Okay, well, maybe that's a future book, because I know there are a lot of interest in the stage productions these days, and so that might be something that, you know, people would be interested in learning about too.
Absolutely.
Well, we want to thank you so much for... We want to thank you so much for calling today, and I'm sorry that the phone connection was so bad, but we did get some interesting information, and I highly recommend this book to anyone who's interested in writing, and your other books, Now Write Fiction, now Write Nonfiction, and was there another one?
The other one hasn't come out yet. That's the one that's
okay
in the oven on mysteries and thrillers.
Okay. All right. So, now available in the Now Write Writing Guide series, Now Write Fiction, Writing Exercises from Today's Best Writers and Teachers, Now Write Nonfiction, which includes memoir, journalism, and creative nonfiction exercises from Today's Best Writers, and this one today, Now Write Screenwriting, with Sherry Lewis. And this is Writers' Voices on KRUU 100.1 FM. Thank you so much for being with us today, Sherry.
Thank you. Be good.
You too. Okay, we have our second guest today, Carolyn Monsell. Is that how you pronounce it, Carolyn? Hello, Carolyn. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Hi.
Okay, hi. So how do you pronounce your last name?
Monsell,
that's what I thought. Okay. This was a very interesting book. It's a book that you can pick up and read and just keep, you know, you don't want to put it down because you want to find out what's going to happen.
Oh, thank you. That means so much to me because that was exactly what I was going for.
Well, and I think you really, it's a small book, and the print is large, and it's double-spaced, which makes it very easy to read for someone like myself,
mm-hmm.
75 years old, and I think that it's, you know, it makes it even more enjoyable. I really do.
Oh, okay, wonderful. That is so great to hear.
Okay, tell us a little bit about yourself, will you please?
Well, I own my own company, Motion Temps LLC, and I do digital project management, and I also do public relations, so
mm-hmm.
that's my day job, and at night, I try to write when I can. So I've actually just picked up writing again more seriously within the last year or so, and it's been a really enjoyable experience. Right now, I'm American, but I actually live overseas in Switzerland, and we are a family of expatriates, as we like to say. So
okay.
I'm from Chicago, but my husband is French. We spent some time in France. for 5 years, and now we actually live in Lausanne, Switzerland, so just near Geneva. And I'm there with my two daughters and a very old cat named Poom, and there we are as a family.
And is it a lot of snow there?
Actually, in my part, not as much. We've been surprised this season, this year, with a bit of snow, but generally, no. If I'm lucky, maybe 2 to 3 inches, 2 or 3 times during the winter season.
Oh, my
gosh. This year, we've actually gotten more snow in all the time that I've been here in the last 3 years. So we've gotten as much as 6 or 7 inches. This year. So the kids really enjoy it because that means they can go sledding, so they're pretty excited about it.
We think of Switzerland as being snowbound all the time, you know?
I know, but the farther you move internally, the farther you move east, the more snow you actually get.
Okay. Well, that's the way it's been in the United States, too, this year. You know, I don't know if you know, but the Northeast is just, they have had terrible storms. Absolutely.
So I'm always keeping an eye on back home in the States. I'm from Chicago, so I know a thing or two about snow. But I've noticed lately that, yes, the East Coast has been getting pounded with snow. And in some cases, from what my relatives report on the West Coast, even up by Washington State, by Seattle, they've gotten snow even. So it's just been a pretty amazing year for wintry weather, it seems.
It really has. In some of our southern states, you know, in Atlanta, they had...
And it's difficult for them because they're not used to it. And so it's like, oh, wow, what do? We have all of the snow. We need to move it. So for me, it's not
a problem.
All that difficult, actually. We see so much of it.
Yeah. I think they had like 10 snow plows for the whole city of Atlanta.
Right. And I have family there too as well. And some of them are transplanted from Chicago, but they've been there for so long, they forget about the snowfall and how to deal with it.
Uh-huh. Oh, boy. Well, is this your first book?
This is, in fact, my first book, yes. And I have to say that I had to be pushed into writing it. I've been trying to write a book for the last 8 years, for as long as I've been overseas. It was what I planned to do. I was going to take some time off and actually finally write a book. But I'm a big procrastinator, so it was hard for me to actually sit down and write this book. And I would write a little bit, little pieces here, little pieces there, but never anything really coherent that I could put together and really say, this is a finished work. So actually, one of my friends was here visiting from Chicago, and she said, are you still working on that book? And I said, yeah. And she says, are you ever going to finish it? And I said, I don't know. I'm stuck. I can't finish it. So she kind of sat down with me, and she said, so what's the problem? What's taking so long? I'm not getting any younger. I need you to finish this book. So she came up with the idea and said, well, can't you just break them down into smaller, short stories, and they're kind of connected? And that sparked an idea. I said, yes, I can do that. Mm-hmm. I said, because if I take some of the stories I've worked on and drill them down a little bit more, I can do that. So she said, well, why don't you do that? And then why don't you set a goal of how many stories you're going to actually write? So I decided that I would do 5 and that there would sort of be this arc that would connect all of these stories together. And once I did that, it got a lot easier. The pressure was off. And then I really realized that I didn't really want to write a novel. What I really just wanted to do was tell some really good stories. And once I made peace with that, it was so much easier to do.
Well, you certainly succeeded.
Thank you.
Encounters in Paris is the title of this. And as I said, you pick it up and start to read, and then you say, well, I just have to read this next one. And, yeah, I better read this next one, too. And pretty soon you've read the whole book.
Pretty soon you're at the end.
Yeah.
I was hoping that that's what would happen, because when I really got serious about putting the project out to the public, some people said, well, short stories, people don't read those so much. They like a novel. They like to really get their hands around a novel. Short stories don't sell very well. And I don't think that's necessarily true. I think there's something about short stories that work. If you don't have a lot of time, if you're very busy, or you want to read but you don't want to read a whole lot, you want to kind of look at a story, finish it, and then reflect upon it, I think short stories are perfect for that. For me, I read a lot, but I also commute a lot, so I'm always on trains, and I have to have a book. I don't go any place without a book. And for me, my phone, having a story, a book on my Kindle, is perfect for me. And when I was putting these stories together, I was thinking about that a lot. How could I actually craft stories that can work in both formats, that can work as a very small, slim paperback that you can drop down in your purse or your bag, but also not too hard on the eyes if you're trying to read it from your phone or from your iPad. And so this felt really good and really right when I was finished.
Well, actually, these are short stories, but they do connect.
They absolutely do, and that was done on purpose because I felt that this was probably the best compromise that I could make, that I didn't feel like I was comfortable and ready to really do a novel. I like to say it's a novel in disguise because, quite frankly, each one of the stories are related and they all are connected. And it is the beginnings of a novel if you really think about it.
It is.
It was, but it allowed me to get over my fear of actually having to put out a novel. And this really helped me accomplish that and make one step forward.
And I think you could continue this.
Well, speaking of that, that's exactly what I'm doing right now.
Oh,
so
good.
In my next project that comes out, which is called 5 Ways to Leave a Lover, it's actually a bit of a novella. And it actually picks up where the two main characters leave off, Ellery and Julian, her husband. We get more into their story. What's the real backstory on this couple? And I leave it up to the readers as for them to find out whether these two stick it out and stay together, or do they part, or what happens with them. Because if you remember in the story, the very last story in Encounters in Paris, the very first line of the book in Some Birds of a Feather says, every goodbye ain't gone.
That's right.
And I think it really does apply to this couple. I don't think we're finished with them yet, and there's more of them in the next series for 5 Ways to Leave a Lover.
Well, like you say, working through real-life problems is actually a process. It's a messy affair, never neat and tidy.
Yes.
And
I really do believe that. I, for me, I know so many books, there seems to have to be a happy ending.
Mm-hmm.
And while that's wonderful, sometimes that's just not the case. Sometimes we're left a little bit ambivalent. We don't know how we feel about the situation at the end. And sometimes it's not always happy. And I think that that's just a realistic look or view on life. And so with this book, that's exactly what happens for Ellery. There isn't necessarily, everything isn't all wrapped up neat and tidy by the end of this book. There are lots of questions that are left that she has to ponder and she still has to work through.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot like life. We all find ourselves that way. There's still some things, still some unfinished business that we have to attend to at a later date.
That's right. So you said that you try to write every day.
I do. I try to write every day if I can, even if it's just a little bit. I got that advice from an author, Douglas Kennedy, in Paris, and he told me, write a little bit every day. Even if what you write is something you end up throwing out later, write something every day just to keep the creativity flowing. Mm-hmm. And you may find that in doing that later, pieces of those stories may fit together for another project you haven't even thought out yet.
Uh-huh.
And that's exactly what happened with this project. Once I got serious about doing the 5 stories, there was a point where I was searching for just the right scene or just the right language. And I went back through and looked at just pieces of stories that I had here and there that I'd saved on my computer, and I found a lot of information that I could work and rework and make it work into this story. So just integrate it right into this story, and it fit perfectly. It was almost like putting together a puzzle in many ways.
Wasn't that a great feeling to be able to do that?
A great feeling, and you know it. When you see, you'll have that perfect line or that perfect delivery from the character, and it's like, bingo, that's it. That's exactly what I was looking for, and you just slip it right into place. And in a lot of cases, that's exactly what happened.
Okay, now, is this a book? Is this self-published?
It is self-published, and it was done purposely. I guess for me, as this being my first book, I didn't have a lot of expectations. The biggest expectation or the biggest goal that I had was to actually finish something. Because if I allowed myself too much time to worry about the marketing behind it or going to find an agent or facing rejection, that would have been a little bit too much for me.
It's a little daunting,
yeah. I wanted to just really get comfortable with the publishing experience.
Mm-hmm.
And in my background and what I do on a day-to-day basis, it was a natural fit for me. At one point, I felt a little bit overwhelmed, and I said, oh, my gosh, there's just so much to do. You have to lay out the book. You have to design a cover. You have to do the marketing. You have to do the public relations. And I felt a little overwhelmed at first. But then when I thought about it, every aspect of what I had to do for this book, I do on a day-to-day basis. I have laid out manuscripts for clients for training manuals and technical manuals. I do marketing and public relations every day. I do design. I do web coding. I do all of those things at some point throughout the course of my day. And when I thought about it and did it one by one, I realized you don't have anything to be afraid of. Just do it and just see what happens.
So, actually,
that's what propels me forward every day, the curiosity of what can happen next if I step out there and get the book in someone else's hands, someone who hasn't seen this before. What else happens?
You're actually in the publishing field.
Yes, I've sort of been sucked into the publishing field at this point.
Yeah.
And it's been a really rewarding experience because it's hard work. And even if you have a background like this, people think, oh, it must be easier for you. It's not. It's every bit as hard for me as someone who doesn't have this background at all. It's tough work. But I enjoy it. I love it because this is something that I really care about, that I'm really passionate about, and I hope that other readers enjoy it as well. So that's what propels me forward. That's what drives me to get up every morning and do this.
You know, it's really wonderful that you can self-publish now and also that there's a print-on-demand situation. I mean,
absolutely. I love this. Because I do feel like I have much more control over the product. I have much more control over the stories that I want to tell, how often I want to tell them. There's no pressure. So when I feel inspired to write and when I feel like I have stories in a state that are comfortable enough to group them together to create a collection or to one day create a novel, I can go ahead and I can publish it and I can be satisfied with that. So when I need help, I know exactly the people to go to get help. So, for example, with this book, I have friends that are editors that have written books and were willing to edit, were willing to help me with graphic design work, et cetera, et cetera. And so what I do is I go to those people and say, hey, can you give me a hand on this, on the parts that maybe is not necessarily my forte, but they're experts at it, and they're willing to help me so that what I put out for the public is the best that I can put out and that is professional and people will enjoy it.
Well, the cover is very well done. I mean, the book it's a very attractive book. And this is important when it's on the shelf or lying, you know, somewhere, or somebody sees it in somebody else's house and they say, oh, what is this? You say, oh, yeah, that's...
Absolutely. And I never realized until now just how important that cover is.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I'm learning every day more and more about the deeper details of actually publishing the right book in the right format and positioning it perfectly, because at the end of the day, there's the creative side of what we do, but then there's also the business side of what we do.
And that's right.
Where the lessons are coming. So in both directions for me, the goal is to become a better writer every day and to challenge myself to write better stories that readers will enjoy, but on the other aspects, to improve my acumen in the business aspects of the business and better understand it and do the best job I can do there as well.
Well, the two stories that I enjoyed the most were A Haunting in, is that Courbevoie?
Courbevoie, yeah.
Wow, I can't believe I did that.
And that's
amazing. I just can't help but think that was your guardian angel.
I think so. But, you know, there's a real-life story behind that. And a lot of what happened that day is actually true. My mother did pass away in 2006, and I was in Côte d'Ivoire, which is a suburb just outside of Paris. It's like two metro stops away outside of Paris, and that was my parish church. So this is where my daughter went to school. It was our Sunday church. And I would go there often, even when Mass wasn't in session, just to spend some time there to reflect and meditate. And my mother died in what would be in the early morning hours in France. And I didn't know what else to do. So I threw on some clothes, and I went to that church, and I sat. And just as I described it in the book, that's exactly what happened. And the funny thing about that is people have asked me, well, was the old lady a ghost? I said, I don't know. But what I can tell you is that before that day, I had never seen her in that church, and I've never seen her after in that church. So I leave that up to everyone else's conclusions as to decide whether or not she was a ghost.
Well, I wouldn't say ghost. I would say guardian angel, probably.
A guardian angel, absolutely. Yeah. And I'll tell you another funny story about that. Before then, I would never speak French unless I absolutely had to. But on that day, when the lady asked me in French what was wrong, I spit it out without any hesitation. My mother died this morning. And I spit it out without any hesitation in French. And it was the first time that I realized that I was speaking the language without thinking out what I had to say ahead of time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I take it that there are a lot of English-speaking people in France then, so you don't have to speak French.
Yes and no. What I will say is there is a large English-speaking community of folks that are there, Americans and British folks and Canadians, yes, but on a day-to-day basis, no, and certainly not in Côte d'Ivoire. So you really do have to learn. You sink or you swim, and even at this point, I am far from fluent, but I've gotten proficient enough in the language where I can make myself understood, and I can certainly read anything. So even now, I say to people, can you write it? Because I'll always understand when it's written. And but there, yes, you have to develop some proficiency of speaking.
Well, you know, everybody has their own inflections of speech and everything, and so I can understand. I understand what you're saying about being able to read it and understand it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So, and it's this way right now, as where I am in Switzerland, where there are four official languages, French, German, Italian, and Swiss German. And at this point, I'm getting the same way in Italian and German, where I can read it. And for me, the experience will be when I return home, I am happy with the idea that I could read in four languages. I'm fine with that. Whether I speak fluently or not, that doesn't matter so much to me.
Okay. The other one that I liked, you can imagine, is Birds of a Feather.
Yes.
And it kind of goes along with that, you know. And but that was a great piece. It really was.
Thank you. Thank you. That one, again, you're right, is very, very closely connected to A Haunting in Côte d'Ivoire because, again, I saw it as more of a tribute to both of my parents. I lost my mother in 2006, but I lost my father far earlier when I was a very small child. And I saw that as an opportunity to look at both of them. And, again, a true story, there are two pigeons, and they are the exact same pigeons every day that sit on my windowsill in the kitchen of my home right now. And they started showing up, and this is a true story. They actually flew through my window, not landing on my bed, but they flew through the window, and I kind of shooed them out through the kitchen area. But every morning, I can find them sitting right there on that ledge. And they'll come more than once if it's a special occasion for me, if it's my birthday, if it's a birthday for one of the children, if I'm having a particularly down day, for example, they will show up. And they're so good now that you can pet them and everything, whereas other pigeons will fly away. These actually stay there, and it's not necessarily about food for them, that you can pet them.
Oh, my gosh.
It gives me a great comfort in knowing that maybe they are who I think they are.
It could be.
Yeah.
Well, we had interviewed a person who actually communicates with animals, telepathically, and interesting stories and interesting possibilities. I mean, they're all God's creations, and why wouldn't we be able to communicate with them? You know?
Absolutely, absolutely. And there's a passage in the book where I talk about the character Alma, but my mother's name was Margaret, and Margaret could. There's a line in there where I talk about the fact that she had to protect one of God's creatures from another.
Mm-hmm.
And that's absolutely true. My mother, I could be on the telephone with her, and she's talking, and all of a sudden she'd stop in mid-sentence, and I'd say, "What are you doing?" And she says, "Hang on a second. I got to go rescue that cat from the dog outside." And she would do that. It was any animal, anything that she thought that was defenseless needed protecting, she was on it. and so I had to make this character just that way, because it's a perfect representation of her.
Yeah. What a great memory that is that you have.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
You could write, several stories about your mother, and have them in a, you know, stories about my mother.
I feel that coming. I'm not ready yet. It's still a little emotional for me.
Mm-hmm.
I see it coming. One of the last conversations I had with my mother before she passed was, she said, "When are you going to write that book? When are you going to write that book about our family? When are you going to do it?" And I said, "I'll get there." And she says, "Okay, because I'm waiting for it." And so bit by bit, I can get there, I think, because there are a lot of stories, because much like that character Alma, she was a character, and she could spin stories better than William Faulkner ever could. She was from the South, and there is that Southern way of telling stories, and she was gifted with it. She could do it.
Mm-hmm.
And she could tell a story better than any of those guys ever could.
How great. Oh, great. We have we've been talking right now to Carolyn Monsell. And tell us, how do you get this book? How can we get Encounters in Paris?
Well, once again, Encounters in Paris is available at all of the online bookstores right now. So
Okay. If
at Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble's, for people who really like Smashwords.com, Goodreads. So anywhere online, at any online bookstore, you can pick up Encounters in Paris.
We also have two very fine bookstores in town here, who I'm sure could get it as well. Okay, do you have a website?
I do. If folks want to know more about me or this book or any of my future projects, they can go to carolynmonsell.com.
Okay, and that's M-O-N-C-E-L is how you spell the last name.
That is right. So carolynmonsell.com.
Well, it and once again, this book is an easy reader, as I like to say.
Because,
and you pick it up and you start to read and you think, "Oh, yeah, I think I'll read the next chapter. Yeah, I think I'll read the next chapter." Pretty soon, you've read the book. And then in the end is they have questions that who was it that asked you these questions? A conversation with Carolyn Monsell.
Actually, I developed them myself, and I thought, what types of questions would people might have about the book or about me in particular?
Right.
And I just wanted to spend a little bit more time sharing some more information about me and what I was thinking about when I wrote the book, especially since this is the first book. So it's a bit of an extended introduction to me and my writing.
It's the first book, but it's not the last book, right? It's not going to be the last
one. Absolutely not. So I am in preparation already for the next book, which will probably come out in fall of this year.
Well, you let us know when it does, because we would like to have you on as a guest again.
Oh, it would be such a pleasure to come back.
Well, I've really, really enjoyed speaking with you and thoroughly enjoyed reading this book. And my daughter, Monica, who is not able to be here today, she's going to enjoy it too, I'm sure.
Okay. So, thank you. That means so much to me.
Okay. Well, you take care and keep in touch with those spirits, okay?
I absolutely will.
Okay. All righty. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you so much.
That was a really great interview, I think, with Carolyn Monsell and her book, Encounters in Paris. And you know what? I want to leave you with this. The scars of life remind us where we have been. They don't have to dictate where we're going. And if you're listening Remember, this program can be heard again on Monday. So maybe you'd like to tell one of your friends if they might like to listen on Monday. And you're listening to KRUU 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield. Up next is the gentleman with Planet Erstwhile. So bye-bye for now.
Writers' Voices is hosted, produced, and engineered by Monica Hadley, Caroline Kilborn, and Shemaine Montana. Archives available at KRUUFM.com and writersvoices.com. Writers' Voices is a production of KRUULP 100.1 FM, broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield, Iowa.